A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He's asking about the bare essential maintenance checks every car owner should be doing. He learned the classic four: oil level with the dipstick, brake fluid reservoir, coolant reservoir, tire pressure. And his question is simple. If you're doing an occasional inspection to make sure your car is in good working order, what would you add to that list? Which is a great question, because those four checks are necessary, but they are not sufficient.
They really aren't, and the data bears this out in a way that's honestly kind of stark. AAA roadside assistance data consistently ranks battery issues, tire problems, and bell failures as the top three reasons people call for a tow truck. Not low oil, not low brake fluid. The things that actually strand people are the things the classic four-item checklist doesn't touch at all.
People are checking four things, feeling responsible, and then getting stranded by completely different things.
And here's the part that makes this worth talking about right now. The average age of vehicles on U.S. roads hit 12.6 years in 2025, according to S&P Global Mobility. That's the oldest fleet we've ever had. These are cars that need more proactive inspection, not less. But at the same time, modern cars have created this false sense of invincibility. Longer service intervals, more sealed components, fewer visible fluids to check. People assume the car will tell them when something's wrong.
Which it won't, until the moment it very much does.
And by then you're on the shoulder of the highway wondering why the battery light just came on and the steering got impossibly heavy. The four checks Daniel mentioned, oil, brake fluid, coolant, tire pressure, those are fluid level and pressure checks. They tell you if something has already gone wrong. A low oil reading means you're either burning or leaking oil. Low brake fluid means your pads are worn or you have a leak. But a full oil reservoir does not prevent a snap serpentine belt. A topped-off coolant tank doesn't stop battery terminal corrosion from leaving you with a no start on a cold morning.
The Classic Four are basically a status report. They tell you what's happening right now with fluids and pressure, but they don't tell you what's about to happen.
That distinction between verifying current status and catching wear patterns before failure, that's the difference between what I'd call reactive checking and predictive inspection. The Family Handyman Guide on this is really clear about it. Visual inspection of belts, hoses, and battery terminals catches problems that fluid levels never will, because those components have no sensor. There's no warning light for a serpentine belt that's developed microcracks across 60% of its surface. There's no dashboard indicator for battery terminals that are slowly building up corrosion.
Which is almost worse than having no warning system at all. You're driving around with a false sense of security because the dashboard is quiet. Meanwhile, the thing that's actually going to fail is invisible to the car's own diagnostics.
That's exactly the trap. And Edmunds makes this point really well. They call the serpentine belt the single most neglected wear item on modern cars. It's external, it's visible, it takes 30 seconds to check, and yet almost nobody looks at it until it snaps. Because the car never tells you to.
What makes a check bare essential versus nice to have? Because you could go down a rabbit hole here. Check your valve clearances, inspect your timing chain tension, pull your spark plugs and read the carbon deposits. There's always more.
And I think the filter is pretty straightforward. A bare essential check meets three criteria. First, it catches a failure mode that's common enough to be worth your time. This is where the AAA data comes in. Battery, belts, tires. Second, it requires no specialty tools and no mechanical skill beyond basic observation. If you need an OBD2 scanner or a compression tester, it's not bare essential. Third, the consequence of ignoring it is disproportionately expensive relative to the effort of checking it.
A $20 belt that takes 30 seconds to inspect, and if it fails, it disables your alternator, water pump, power steering, and air conditioning simultaneously while costing you a tow plus labor.
That's the poster child. And Daniel's original four checks, those absolutely belong on the list. But they're only covering the fluid systems. What's missing is the wear items. The things that degrade gradually and visibly if you bother to look.
What are we adding?
5 specific inspection points. Battery condition, serpentine belt, engine air filter, cabin air filter, and an undercarriage rust and leak check. Those 5, plus the original 4, gives you a 9-point inspection that covers the failure pattern behind the majority of roadside breakdowns. And the whole thing takes about 15 minutes once a month. No lift required, no tools beyond maybe a screwdriver for the airbox.
15 minutes a month to avoid the shoulder of the highway at midnight. That's a trade I'll take.
Let's start with the battery, because it's the number one culprit. The DMV.org guide and Family Handyman both rank battery terminal corrosion as the top cause of no-start conditions that have nothing to do with the battery's age. And here's what's actually happening. That white or greenish crusty buildup on the terminals isn't just cosmetic. It's hydrogen gas leaking from the battery, reacting with the lead in the terminals, and forming a layer of lead sulfate that increases electrical resistance.
The battery can be fully charged, but the corrosion is basically a wall between the battery and the starter.
And cold weather makes it dramatically worse, because cold cranking amps are already marginal, and now you've added resistance at the connection point. The visual check is dead simple. Pop the hood, look at the terminals. If you see anything that looks like crusty green or white powder, that's a problem. But you also want to look at the battery case itself. Bulging sides or cracks in the casing mean the battery has been overcharging or exposed to extreme heat, and it's on borrowed time.
None of this triggers a dashboard light.
The car has no way to measure terminal resistance. It only knows if the alternator is charging and whether system voltage is within range. A corroded terminal will still show normal voltage right up until the moment you turn the key and nothing happens. The fix is a $5 wire brush and 30 seconds of scrubbing. But the misconception I want to kill here is that battery corrosion is normal and harmless. It's not. It's a measurable electrical problem that gets worse every day you ignore it.
That's battery. What about the belt? You mentioned Edmunds calls it the single most neglected wear item.
The serpentine belt. And this one is fascinating because modern belts are incredible. They last 60 to 100,000 miles. But when they fail without warning. There's no squealing, no gradual symptom. One moment it's fine, the next moment it's snapped. And because it drives the alternator, water pump, power steering, and AC compressor all from a single belt, the failure is catastrophic and immediate. Your battery light comes on, your steering goes heavy, and your engine starts overheating because the water pump stopped.
Single point of failure for 4 critical systems.
The inspection takes literally 10 seconds. Engine off, cold. Run your hand along the rib side of the belt. You're feeling for 3 things. Glazing, which is when the surface goes shiny and hard. That means the rubber has heat hardened and lost grip. Cracking, which looks like small transverse splits across the ribs. And fraying on the edges, which means the belt is misaligned or a pulley bearing is going bad. The DMV.org guide also recommends what they call the quarter test. If you can twist the belt more than 90 degrees with your thumb and forefinger, the tensioner is worn and the belt is too loose.
What does this belt cost versus what happens if it breaks?
The belt itself is $15 to $50. If it snaps on the road, you're looking at a minimum of $200 for the tow plus labor to replace it. But here's the knock-on effect nobody talks about. When a serpentine belt snaps at highway speed, it can whip around the engine bay and tear out the alternator wiring harness. Now your $50 belt replacement becomes a $1,200 alternator harness repair. I've seen this exact scenario in shop invoices.
A 10-second touch check prevents a 4-figure repair. That's the kind of math I like.
Yet it's the most neglected wear item. Which brings us to the air filter, and this one is almost more frustrating because it's even easier to check. The air filter box is right on top of the engine, usually held shut by 2 to 4 clips. Pop the clips, lift the cover, pull out the filter, hold it up to sunlight. If you can't see light through the paper element, it's clogged and needs replacement. $10 to $25, 2 minutes of work.
What's the actual failure pattern when it's clogged?
The engine is an air pump. It needs a precise ratio of air to fuel. The mass airflow sensor measures incoming air and tells the computer how much fuel to inject. A clogged filter restricts airflow, so the MAF sensor sees less air and reduces fuel accordingly. The engine runs lean, loses power, and fuel economy drops. Family Handyman says 10 to 15%. But the really insidious part is that the computer can compensate for a while. So the driver doesn't notice anything wrong until the restriction exceeds the MAF sensor's compensation range. And then suddenly you've got to check engine light for a mass airflow sensor code, rough idle, and poor acceleration.
At that point, the dealership is quoting you for a sensor replacement, not a filter.
I have a perfect case study for this. 2018 Honda CR-V, 45,000 miles. Owner brings it in complaining of rough idle and poor acceleration. Dealership diagnoses a dirty throttle body and quotes $400 for cleaning. The actual cause: the air filter was packed with debris from parking under a tree for 2 years. An $18 filter and 90 seconds of labor solved the problem completely. The throttle body was fine.
The filter was so clogged, the engine was basically suffocating, and the computer had been masking it until it couldn't anymore.
Here's the counterintuitive wrinkle, because I want to be fair. A slightly dirty air filter actually filters better than a brand new one. The trapped particles create a secondary filter layer. The problem isn't a little dirt. It's when the filter becomes so packed that airflow restriction exceeds what the MAF sensor can compensate for. That's when you lose performance and risk sensor damage. So you're not replacing the filter because it's dirty. You're replacing it because it's too restrictive.
That's a nuance worth having. It also explains why people ignore it. They pull the filter, see some dirt, and think it's still working. Which it is, until it isn't.
The comparison I want to draw here is between the serpentine belt and the timing belt, because people confuse these constantly. The timing belt is internal. It's behind covers, requires significant engine disassembly to even see, and if it fails, the engine destroys itself. Valves hit pistons, engine is scrap metal. The serpentine belt is external, fully visible, takes seconds to inspect, and if it fails, you coast to the shoulder. Yet most drivers treat them exactly the same. Ignore both until one of them breaks.
One of those failures is an inconvenience. The other is a new engine. But the inspection burden is wildly different.
That's the pattern with all three of these: battery, belt, air filter. They fail often, they're trivially easy to inspect, and the cost of ignoring them is orders of magnitude higher than the cost of checking. Yet they're invisible to the car's own diagnostics, so people assume everything is fine until it isn't. Those three cover the engine bay. But there are two more that most drivers never think about, one inside the cabin and one underneath the car. The cabin air filter is the one that genuinely frustrates me, because it's the easiest check on the entire list, and almost nobody does it.
I'll admit, I forget that thing exists until the defroster gives up in January.
You're not alone. Edmunds and Family Handyman both note that cabin air filters were optional on most cars before 2010. Now they're standard on virtually every vehicle, but the owner's manual is the only place that mentions them. No warning light, no drivability symptom, nothing. A clogged cabin filter reduces HVAC airflow by 30-50% and can harbor mold, bacteria, and pollen, but the car will never tell you.
You're breathing whatever's growing in there.
That's the health angle people miss. A saturated cabin filter can cause what some mechanics call sick car syndrome: headaches, sneezing, eye irritation during drives. It's not the AC system, it's the filter acting as a petri dish. The inspection is identical to the engine air filter. Locate it behind the glove box or under the dash, pull it out, hold it to light. If light doesn't pass through or if it smells musty, replace it. $15 to $30, 5 minutes.
The case study you mentioned earlier with the Subaru, that was a cabin filter, wasn't it?
2015 Outback, 80,000 miles. Owner complained of musty smell when the AC ran. Dealership quoted $150 for an AC evaporator cleaning service. The actual cause was a cabin filter saturated with moisture and growing mold. A $25 filter, 5-minute swap, problem gone. And here's the practical angle. If your defroster struggles to clear fogged windows in winter, check the cabin filter first. Reduced airflow means the AC dehumidifier can't pull moisture off the glass.
A $5 piece of paper can make your defroster useless, and your cabin smell like a basement. And the car says nothing.
That's the pattern with all of these. Which brings us to the undercarriage check. This is the one that requires the most physical effort, but catches the most expensive problems. DMV.org recommends a visual crawl under every oil change. You don't need a lift. Just lie on the ground with a flashlight.
What are you actually looking for?
First, fluid drips. Oil is brown or black and slippery. Coolant is green, orange, or pink with a sweet smell. Transmission fluid is red and thin. Brake fluid is clear to amber and slippery, usually near the wheels. Second, rust on frame rails and suspension components. Surface rust is cosmetic. It's the flaking rust that reveals pitting or holes you need to worry about, because that's structural. Third, the exhaust system. Rust holes or hanging sections can let carbon monoxide into the cabin. Fourth, and this is the big one for cost, the CV axle boots. Those are the rubber accordion boots on the axles going to the front wheels. If they're torn, they fling grease onto the inside of the wheel.
What happens when the grease is gone?
The constant velocity joint runs dry, overheats, and fails. A CV axle replacement runs $400 to $800 per side. But if you catch the torn boot early, before significant grease loss, it's $150 to $250 for the boot and labor. The inspection takes 30 seconds per wheel. Just look for grease splatter or torn rubber.
A 30-second glance saves $500 minimum.
Here's a trick that makes the fluid part even easier, the cardboard test. Slide a piece of cardboard under the engine bay overnight. In the morning, any drips will be visible and you can identify them by color and position. No crawling required for that part.
That's almost too simple.
It really is. And that's the thing that connects all five of these additions to Daniel's original four. The complete 9-point check, battery terminals, serpentine belt, engine air filter, oil, brake fluid, coolant, cabin filter, tires, undercarriage, covers roughly 90% of preventable failures. And the insight from Family Handyman, DMV.org, and Edmunds all converges on the same uncomfortable truth. The most expensive car repairs are not the complex ones. They're the simple ones that were ignored until they caused secondary damage. If you're going to start doing one thing differently after this episode, here's exactly what that looks like. 9 points, top to bottom, front to back. You can run this in 15 minutes, and you don't need a lift, a scanner, or anything beyond your eyes and hands.
Walk me through the order. I'm going to want to remember this.
Start under the hood at the battery. Look at the terminals for that white or green crust. Check the case for bulging or cracks. Then move to the serpentine belt. Run your hand along it, feel for glazing, cracking, fraying, do the quarter test for tension. Another 20 seconds. Then pop the clips on the air filter box. Pull the filter, hold it to light. If light doesn't pass through, replace it. That's your first three. All in the engine bay, maybe 2 minutes total.
Then the original four slot in.
Right in sequence. Pull the dipstick, check oil level, glance at the brake fluid reservoir, level and color. Dark brake fluid means it's absorbed moisture and needs flushing, by the way. Check the coolant reservoir between the min and max lines. Those three take another 90 seconds. Then you move inside the car, drop the glove box, pull the cabin filter, same light test as the engine filter. If it smells like a basement, it's done.
That's 7 and 8.
Pressure gauge on all four, plus the penny test for tread depth. Stick a penny in the tread with Lincoln's head upside down. If you can see the top of his head, you're below 2/32 of an inch, and those tires are done. That's number 8. And finally, number 9, the undercarriage. Cardboard under the engine bay overnight if you want to be methodical about leaks, or just lie down with a flashlight and scan for fluid drips, flaking rust, exhaust holes, and torn CV boots. That's the full circuit.
The protocol is, pick a Sunday, once a month, 15 minutes.
Here's the part that makes this more valuable than a single check ever will be. Keep a notebook in the glove box. Write down the date and anything you observe. Even if everything looks fine, write all clear. Because trend spotting over 3 or 4 months tells you things a single snapshot never will. A slowly dropping oil level over 3 checks means something very different than a single low reading. A CV boot that goes from intact to starting to crack to fully torn. You catch that in the middle, not at the end.
Pattern recognition over perfection. The goal isn't to be a mechanic. It's to notice when something is changing.
And the tool barrier here is almost non-existent. The one upgrade worth buying is a tire pressure gauge with a bleeder valve, $10 to $15, and a $5 battery terminal brush. That's it. Everything else on this list is visual inspection and your hands. The real barrier isn't skill, and it isn't tools. It's the belief that the car will tell you if something is wrong. It won't. Not until it's too late.
By too late, you mean a tow truck, a dealership service bay, and a repair bill that could have been a $20 part.
The research across Family Handyman, DMV.org, and Edmunds all lands on the same uncomfortable math. The most expensive repairs are the simple ones ignored until they cause secondary damage. a $15 belt snaps and takes out a $1,200 wiring harness. A torn CV boot goes unnoticed and turns a $250 boot replacement into an $800 axle. A clogged cabin filter gets diagnosed as an AC system cleaning for $150 when the fix is $25 in 5 minutes.
The 9-point check is essentially an insurance policy where the premium is 15 minutes a month and the deductible is zero.
Unlike actual insurance, you get to keep the money you would have spent on repairs. That Subaru owner with the musty AC, she spent $25 instead of $150. The Honda owner with the clogged air filter, $18 instead of $400. Those aren't hypotheticals. Those are real invoices from real shops. As cars change, this checklist changes too. And that's the question I keep coming back to. What happens to all of this as the fleet goes electric?
Right, because an EV doesn't have a serpentine belt, or an engine air filter, or oil to check with a dipstick.
Some of these checks become completely obsolete. No serpentine belt means no belt inspection, no engine air filter, no oil dipstick. But other checks become more important, not less. EVs have high-voltage battery cooling systems, liquid cooling loops that can develop leaks just like a radiator. You lose coolant in an EV battery thermal management system, and suddenly your $80,000 battery pack is cooking itself.
The coolant reservoir check doesn't go away. It just gets more expensive if you ignore it.
Tire wear on EVs is more aggressive because of instant torque. The rubber meets the road harder and faster. Tire pressure and tread depth checks become something you can't afford to be casual about. Then there's the undercarriage. That becomes arguably the most critical check on the whole list. EV battery packs are mounted low in the chassis, and they're vulnerable to impact damage and corrosion. A rusted-through battery enclosure is not a $500 repair.
That's a replace-the-car kind of problem.
It can be. So the 9-point list evolves, but the principle doesn't. Proactive inspection catches things before they cascade. Whether the thing is a serpentine belt or a battery cooling line, the cost curve is the same, minutes now or hundreds later.
That's really the thing Daniel's question gets at, whether he meant to or not. The best maintenance checklist is the one you actually do. A perfect 12-page inspection protocol you ignore is worse than a 9-point check you run every month.
That's the truth hiding in plain sight across all three of those sources. Family Handyman, DMV.org, Edmunds. They all converge on the same uncomfortable math. Proactive inspection costs minutes. Reactive repair costs hundreds. And the gap between those two numbers is entirely about whether you looked.
Start with the 9-point check. Do it once. Adjust based on what you find. The notebook in the glove box matters more than getting every step perfect the first time.
If this episode saves one person from a snap belt on the highway or a $400 air filter misdiagnosis, we've done our job. If you found it useful, rate and review the show. It helps other drivers find this episode before their next breakdown.
Now, Hilbert's Daily Fun Fact.
In 1692, a Russian tax collector on the Yamal Peninsula recorded in his ledger that local Nenets reindeer herders would settle disputes by wrestling in coats soaked with fish oil, an early written account of what would later be codified as Yagli Gurik. Turkish oil wrestling, suggesting the practice may have spread along Arctic trade routes centuries before it became an Ottoman sport.
I have so many questions, and I'm not sure I want any of them answered.
In the Arctic. That's commitment to the craft.
Thanks to Hilbert Flemingtop for producing. This has been My Weird Prompts. Find us at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back next week.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep. The stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too. From half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close. From sloth, from man, from long-eared host. My weird prompts, until next time, stay. stay curious, keep weird in mind.